Blog Talk Radio.
You are getting immersed once again. Club Sheeran has hit the airwaves. On this Wednesday, April 24th, the year of our Lord, 2013, this is the Off the Wall podcast on Blog Talk Radio. We're live for a half hour, in case this is your first time joining the program. Live for a half hour, and then it is archived the rest of the day and for the rest of time at yesnetwork.com. It's me, it's your buddy Chris Sheeran, taking you through the next half hour until the big guy, Mike Francesa, will take over on Yes and take you through a 5.5 hour show from Fairfield University today. I think we can get rid of the music now. And Mike will no doubt be talking about the NFL draft. You know that. And if Mike could talk about the NFL draft, the guy on the other end of this conversation right now, besides myself, a very good friend of mine, and the guy that developed NFLDraftBible.com, he's a hustler. It's Rick Saratella. Rick, long time no talk.
I'm a hustler. I'm a hustler. What's going on, bud?
How are you, man? Nice to hear your voice once again.
Absolutely. Doing good, doing good. We're on location here, actually, just soaking in the NFL draft festivities. Commissioner Goodell was out here. NFL Play 60. They donated a $1.5 million check to help 900 youth football teams in the tri-state area. So all the NFL draft prospects on hand. Really good event that the NFL puts on.
Sounds like a good atmosphere there, Rick, and I really appreciate the time. I thank you for hopping aboard today to break this down for me, because really in a way I could put it that people could, in my age group, could really appreciate is you are the professor and I am the skipper. The draft is easy for you. It's difficult for me.
Yes.
So let's start off with an overview talent-wise, Rick. Do you classify this as a down year, a lot of boom or bust guys in 2013?
You know, I got to say, I've never been associated with a draft that's had this many players in the first round with this many question marks. You know, I think, though, you know, just to speak on the talent of this group, I think it's been undersold a little bit because, you know, you don't have that franchise quarterback. You don't have those blue chipper guys to kind of build your organization around, but you do have a lot of talent. I think this is a deep draft. I think you'll pluck starters into the third, maybe even the fourth round. I just think that the biggest question mark is just these quarterbacks and trying to decipher where they're going to go, where they're going to land. I've never been associated with a draft this close. We just don't know who's going number one. We don't know where the quarterbacks are going to go. So I think a lot of people's mock drafts are not going to be looking too pretty this year.
All right. Well, how many, since you brought up the quarterbacks, how many quarterbacks do you think can go, have a chance to go in the first round, if any?
Well, I think what we're hearing a lot right now, the hot topic is Ryan Nassib coming off the board as high as number 8 to the Buffalo Bills.
That seems
That seems to be the consensus. So after that, you know, I don't know if Geno Smith really fits into the top 10. I could see him sliding maybe all the way into the 20s. And I think that's where it gets interesting because we saw a lot of trading last year at the top of the draft. The first 11 picks, 6 of them were dealt. I think we could see something similar this year, but in the latter part of the first round where, you know, if a team did bypass on a quarterback early on, will they be looking to trade up and move back into the latter part of the first round? And you're talking about, you know, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Cleveland Browns, maybe the Arizona Cardinals want to groom a guy behind Carson Palmer. So at the end of the day, it's a quarterback needy league. There's a lot of mediocre quarterback play. I think at least 2, possibly 3 quarterbacks in the first round. And I do not see Matt Barkley being one of them.
Wow. That's amazing. Considering the level he was on at USC before he got hurt, and you see what that does, and you see why basically some guys come out after that junior season. They don't want to risk the injury and risk their draft stock. But let me do this really quick, Rick. Chiefs have the first pick. John Dorsey's in his first year as the general manager there with Kansas City. They just brought in Alex Smith. They have a brand-new coach in Andy Reid. Dorsey has said he is going to bring in the best player with that first pick. So I am making Rick Saratella of NFLDraftBible.com the Chiefs general manager. You have that first pick, Rick. Who are you taking?
For me, it's Luke Jokel. I just think it's the safest play in terms of talent, a plug-and-play guy that you can have a potential franchise left tackle for the next decade. And, you know, they don't grow on trees. So I think when you look at his body of work, his skill set, and just everything, checking off every box there was leading up to the whole draft process, whether it be the All-Star game, the combine, the pro day, he pretty much showed you everything you wanted to see. And I think for that reason, Luke Jokel is going to be the number one pick.
All right. Now, the Chiefs aren't picking again until 63 in the third round. They traded that second round pick to get Alex Smith. Now, they have Pro Bowl players on this team. You have a safety, Eric Berry, Jamal Charles, of course, the running back, Tamba Ali, and Derek Johnson at linebacker. All Pro Bowl players last year. I'm not including Colquitt, the punter. I don't think we have to worry about the punter in this situation.
They're
but
people
how
too,
important.
Chris.
I know. They're people too. I get it. But how I used to punt, by the way, but how important is this pick for Kansas City at one when they're not picking again until 63?
You know, it's extremely important because there's a reason why you're picking number one overall. I think, you know, just to follow up on your point, you know, they are shopping the tackle there, Brandon Albert, so they're going to try to reacquire that second round pick. But when you have to wait until that third round to pick again, I think it's just that much more of an importance to make sure you hit it right. And there's a lot of people out there that might prefer Eric Fisher over Luke Jokel, but I think when you talk about, again, the body of work doing it in the SEC, I think that's why Jokel is kind of more the sure thing. And that's why you need to hit, because you got to wait now another two rounds to add an impact player.
And you just hope that Jokel's not Tony Mandarich, you know, the cover of Sports Illustrated and what he eats a week and the groceries he buys, and he turns out to be a bust pretty much. You remember that Sports Illustrated story?
Am I just
making that up? All right, the Eagles, this is a local podcast, Rick. You know, we talk about New York sports. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that first pick, though. I just think it's intriguing every year how this gets broken down by so many people, and I appreciate, once again, you coming on. But something that's going to directly reflect. First, I want to get your thoughts on this. When a team drafts, like the Eagles have the four, if they don't trade out of that four and pick up a couple more picks in the first round, which they may do, but if they don't trade out of that four and they take somebody, does that affect the Giants and other teams in the NFC East and what they do? Or are teams pretty much set in their plans going into this draft?
Well, I don't know if it's going to exactly have a domino effect on the other NFC East teams, and I'll talk specifically on the Giants, because Jerry Reese has done a phenomenal job in terms of
Jerry, and again, trust Rick.
Oh yeah, and again, I mean, this guy is always picking at the end of the draft. Now they pick a little bit earlier this year than in years past, but the one phenomenal job Jerry Reese has done is kind of waiting to see the best player available that falls and matching it up to a team need. So I think that, you know, the Eagles are one of the most interesting teams in this draft just because of the Chip Kelly dynamic, and you don't really know what he's bringing to the NFL. And is he going to bring that high speed, you know, hurry up kind of offense? Is he going to bring that 3-4 hybrid defense that kind of switches over to the 4-3? And how much is he going to bank on guys that he's familiar with? You talk about a Deion Jordan, a potential top 10 pick that he had at Oregon. How much does that factor in when, you know, you're looking for an outside pass rusher and you got Barkavius Mingo from LSU that a lot of teams have a little bit rated higher? But in the NFL, that whole transition, if you got a guy that knows your system, knows your scheme, I think that's where it becomes intriguing, especially with a guy like Kyle Long from Oregon, you know, looking at the second and third round. Again, a guy that's familiar with the Philadelphia system and a guy that could, you know, be very attractive to the Eagles. Now with the Giants, should I give away a sneak peek as who they might target?
Well, let's not get there just yet.
Okay. Keep them waiting.
We'll get to the Giants in a second. I want to keep people around waiting on this podcast. I don't want to, you know, rush the bit too much here. But, you know, the Eagles, and you mentioned Chip Kelly, you know, that fast-paced offense that he brought to the table at Oregon, now he brings to South Philly with the Eagles. Howie Roseman, the youngest GM in the NFL, he's going to be 38 on June 23rd, born in Brooklyn, raised in Marlboro, New Jersey, Jersey guy like us. Been with the Eagles since 2000. He was an unpaid intern with the Eagles in 2000 and has just been promoted and promoted and promoted. Now, he was the GM since 2010, but Andy Reid had the final say on personnel here. Do you think that changes now that Kelly comes on board and Roseman maybe makes the separation between the coach that's making these final personnel decisions and Roseman is probably the final say here now?
Yeah, I would agree with that logic. And I think, you know, like you said, Roseman has been around the block. He kind of has done it and been there and kind of knows the NFL landscape, so to speak. Whereas, you know, I still think that Chip Kelly will have his influence. And I think it's important to have that healthy dialogue with the player GM relationship because, again, you're talking about a whole new system, a whole new scheme. So you do, as a GM, want to kind of pick his brain and say, hey, does this guy mesh with what you're working with? Hey, we got a couple targets here. We're picking at number four. Here's five guys. You know, how do you kind of see them fitting into your system? So I think it's going to be kind of a trial by error on the fly with this first draft for that duo, just because I still think that Howie Roseman is learning what Chip Kelly's trying to implement here. And I think Chip Kelly is going to have to not necessarily want his say, but definitely have an influence in terms of guys that fit his system and his scheme, because let's be honest, what he's about to bring to the NFL could change the whole style of play.
That is an excellent point. Rick Saratella joining us from NFL Draft Bible, a former colleague of mine here at the YES Network. And as I said at the top, a hustler. He has done this from the ground up, and he's done a tremendous job. He puts out the Draft Bible every year. Go check it out, NFLDraftBible.com. Rick, let's get into some local teams now, and we'll start with the New York Jets. And obviously we talk about the Darrelle Revis trade. The Jets have the 9 and the 13 in the first round, and you could basically, Rick, throw a dart at a dartboard to what the Jets need in this draft. I mean, pick it if they need it. Wide receiver, linebacker, cornerback, safety,
everything but
defensive
a center.
Line, offensive line, running back, everything but a center, and Mangold. I mean, he's just a perennial Pro Bowler. But what do they do here, Rick? Do they try to parlay this 9 or 13 into more picks, or do they hang on to these? And if they do, what do you see them doing? What falls to 9 and 13 for the New York Jets here?
Well, I think, you know, realistically, anybody in the top 10 would love to trade down. But it takes two to tango, and trying to find the right trade partner is not always feasible. Now, you know, you talk about a team like the San Diego Chargers that have been linked to one of these offensive tackles. Maybe they have an interest to move up to number 9. And then you talk about the Atlanta Falcons, another team rumored up trying to trade up and get one of those cornerbacks. And then, you know, you factor in the Minnesota Vikings, St. Louis Rams, each with a pair of first-round picks. So, you know, if the Jets do want to parlay this into more picks, I'm sure they would love to do that. If they're not able to and they have to stand ground and stay pat, you know, to me, the more I look at it, a Chance Warmack from Alabama makes more and more sense at number 9. And I know it's not the sexy pick. You know, the fan base isn't going to really get too giddy about, you know, selecting an offensive guard. But I think, you know, building from the inside out has always been one of my personal beliefs. And I think that's what the Jets need to do here, kind of add some pieces for the future to kind of, you know, keep the fan base excited about. I mean, because that PSL ticket comes with 5 digits now, and you just traded away your best player. So, you know, I mean, right now you're looking like a shell of a football team. I think, you know, Chance Warmack makes a lot of sense, and I think they got to come back. I know the hot button topic is a guy we just mentioned, Barkavius Mingo, and maybe a potential outside linebacker. But to me, you know, Mark Sanchez needs a new best friend underneath, and Dustin Keller is no longer there. So to me, Tyler Eifert at 13, as crazy as it sounds, this guy is a tall, explosive pass catcher, capable of grabbing 80 balls a season. And again, you replace Keller, you add a guy on the offensive line, you add your building blocks for this year, and then maybe next year you can go out and get your quarterback. One other guy I'll throw into the equation, and he's a little, you know, undersized and a gidget and gadget type of player, but Tavon Austin, I believe, will be in the mix at number 13. I think the Jets will look long and hard there if he's still on the board.
Well, you're a lover of football, like me, like everybody pretty much, Rick. And I know who your favorite team is, and we'll leave that out for a little bit longer as well. And I'm going to ask you about them, too, a little bit later. But let me go into this Revis thing. If you take yourself – let's make yourself a Jet fan just for a second. Do you agree with what they did? I talked about this ad nauseum on Monday after it happened. And my thought on this situation, and I'll give it to you, and you could debate me as long as you want. If they were not going to re-sign this guy, if Woody Johnson was not going to bring him back at the end of this year, and you don't know what he is coming back from the ACL, why not? And I know everybody's saying they didn't get enough back for him. They got the 13 pick. It's a no-brainer to me. I understand he is the number one shutdown cornerback, you know, being compared to Deion Sanders and even a more physical Deion Sanders. I get that. He takes out your number one receiver every game, the number one receiver, two catches, no catches, one catch. My buddy brought up a great point. He's a Bills fan. The only receiver that really had gotten the better of Darrell Revis from time to time was Stevie Johnson of the Bills. So if you think about that for a second, do you think the Jets made the right call here? And I don't even think it was Itzik. I tend to agree with the MO that's going around all the New York radio stations and all the rumors that are circling around, that this was a Woody Johnson move, didn't want this guy. And I think there was a lot of animosity between owner and player for all the holdouts and all the baloney that he had to go through with this guy, even though he was the best at his position in the entire league in some time. Your thoughts?
Okay, well, you know, here's the thing. As a Jets fan playing devil's advocate, okay, I'm looking at it like, hey, you just traded possibly the greatest Jets player in franchise history. Okay. I mean, at 26 years old, you know, he's still in the prime of his career, and you see how confident he is in terms of bouncing back from this injury because he's betting on himself. Now, do I agree with the logic of trading him off? I do, only because of the way I disagree in terms of how they handled this. And they made it everybody's business to know. And I think they lost a lot of leverage because of that. And also the patient approach of Itzik, I think, backfired on him because you had more teams that were interested in acquiring this guy. And at one point, the San Francisco 49ers were one of them, and they hold 13 draft picks. So rather than seizing the moment and taking advantage and being able to kind of
drum up interest from another end,
this guy, you know, was too patient and played his cards to a fault to where, you know, now he had zero leverage in negotiations. It was taking
a
leave it type of deal.
That is a tremendous point out of you, and I completely get that side of the argument that the Jets didn't get enough for a player of Revis's caliber. And you're right. He was the best New York Jet, God, probably in my lifetime. I mean, I can't think of one, unless you go back to the sack exchange and want to pick one of those guys. But he was one of the best Jet players of all time, and it stinks that they had to come to this moment in time where they had to trade him. But I think in the long run the Jets are going to benefit from this. It all depends on Itzik in this draft with the 9 and the 13 and what they're able to do. But I want to know from you, too, how will this Revis trade play out in the future? Will it be a win-win for both teams as I think it will be? Or, Rick, in the long run, is this going to be a huge mistake by the Jets?
Well, you know, again, just following up on some of the points that you made, I do agree that this move, sometimes there's a thing called addition by subtraction. And there was a lot of bad apples in that Jet locker room last year, Darrell Revis being one of them. So,
yeah.
I'm even on board to the point now, like, listen, if we're going to clean the house, turn it upside down, shake it in and out, let's clean house entirely. You got rid of Bart Scott, right? You got rid of Bart Scott. You got rid of Revis. Let's eliminate Santonio Holmes because, you know what, he's another bad apple of the bunch. So why not just get rid of that whole negative atmosphere inside the locker room? And, yeah, I know he's the only, you know, skilled position player left with any kind of talent, but – I mean, if you're a clean house, you have to do it right. Now, getting back to who wins, who loses, you know, I think Darrell Revis comes out the big winner here just because, you know, even if he only plays 2 years with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, he's going to pocket $32 million guaranteed. And
Absolutely.
The Tampa Bay Buccaneers gave up enough where even if Revis flops this year, even if he gets hurt again, the compensation that they gave up to get him, he's going to be there for at least 2 years. So I think ultimately Revis is the big winner. I think Tampa Bay is a winner just because they had the cap space A, and they filled the need B, that you just can't find a player that good at number 13. Now, ultimately, will it win out for the Jets as well? You know, it's tough to say. I think a lot of that we won't know until 5 years from now. And like you said, this is going to be Itzik's defining moment, his stamp on the team, so to speak. And I just feel sorry if one of these picks is a cornerback because he's going to be playing in that shadow and constantly being compared to a Darrell Revis. But in terms of facing reality, realizing that this guy has to go, you got the most that you could get for him at the moment. So ultimately, at the end of the day, I guess all sides win, but the Jets don't win as much.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be a huge draft for a couple of Johns, the GM of the Chiefs, John Dorsey, and the GM of the Jets, John Idzik. I just don't see it. You know, the most defining draft is their first draft, and this is really not the draft, as we mentioned, for them to really be breaking in because, as you said, it's a little bit of a down year this year. There's a lot of guys you just don't know. They can go one way or the other. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see. Now let's turn our attention to the Giants. Now, the Giants don't need as much as the Jets, obviously, but they do need help offensive line, defensive line. They could always use another cornerback and, of course, a linebacker. A couple of names that I raised my eyebrow, Rick, that came up. Now, I trust Jerry Reese, whatever he does. I mean, he doesn't want to pick at 19. He's out there quoted as saying, you know, we're picking too soon this year. You know, we're usually picking later because, you know, we won the Super Bowl. We're picking 32nd. He'd rather pick 32nd. And he got Andre Brown, I think, at 32nd, if I'm not mistaken. Or was it – no, it was David Wilson. I'm sorry. I knew it was a running back.
Correct.
It was David Wilson
yes.
with the 32nd pick out of Virginia Tech. And they just re-signed Andre Brown. That's why he was on my mind. But Alec Ogletree and Manti Te'o, between the – now, Te'o, really, I went, really? The Giants? After everything that this kid has, you know, pretty much been through, and you know, after his 40 times at the combine, do you think let's start with him? Do you think there's any shot the Giants take him with the 19th pick in the first round?
I think it's a possibility, Manti Te'o. That is, I do think it's a possibility. They had him in for a visit. They kind of wanted to get to know him a little bit more, wined and dined him, took him and his girlfriend out to dinner here in New York. And, you know, in terms of the intrigue and mystery surrounding everything, I don't think he has as much question marks as an Alec Ogletree, where
well,
I'm not
what
sure.
What are the question marks there with Ogletree? Break
well,
that
Ogletree,
down for us.
Well, you got the DUI, you got some off-the-field baggage there, and you got some questionable character concerns. Now,
he's smaller, too, for a linebacker, no?
Yeah, you know, I mean, they're similar in size. I think where Ogletree has the strength over Te'o is just, and I know Manti Te'o had 7 interceptions, so he was dropping back and covering somebody at Notre Dame. There are some question marks, though, as to whether or not he is a three-down linebacker. But I think Alec Ogletree is a three-down linebacker, and he presents a little bit more upside. I'm just not sure in terms of DNA, he fits with the Giants program. So if I would have leaned towards one or the other, I would think Manti Te'o maybe fits the mold a little bit more than Alec Ogletree. And another guy to keep in mind here is Kevin Minter from LSU, another one of these middle linebacker prospects that, you know, maybe not as talented as the first two guys we discussed, But when you factor in the whole package and off-the-field issues, there are no concerns. Some people view him as maybe the safest way to go at the middle linebacker position.
Well, you brought up LSU. What about the Honey Badger? I mean, is this kid
Love
really going to drop to the third round because of his off-the-field issues?
I think it's a possibility. You know, from what you hear, third round seems to be where he's pegged. I would have no problem.
He's an electric player, though. I mean,
right? I know.
You gotta roll the dice.
I agree, 100%, Chris. And you talk about a guy that just has a nose for the football. He makes momentum changing plays, and he brings a lot to the table just in terms of his ability to return kicks, return punts, be a gunner on special teams, go down and make
a tackle. And that's definitely something the Giants have been lacking throughout the years.
Absolutely. So he fills both return needs. Yes, and a ball hawk on special teams as a gunner. And not only that, he can come in, play a nickel slot type of deal, and emerge. At the cornerback skill set position, I kind of compare him favorably to that of a Ladarius Webb up in Baltimore, a guy who kind of came in, played the slot corner, eventually developed and emerged into a starting cornerback. And you got to remember, this kid led the LSU Tigers in tackles 2 years ago. He had 76 tackles.
Well, I just don't see it. If he's there at 19, and I know the character issues, and I know that's a big thing with the Giants, and I respect the fact that, you know, they tend to bring in guys that fit into their system, quote unquote, as you said, but you want to win football games. And if this kid who's said he's starting to change and he's starting to reach out to kids and he's starting to turn his life around, you could be the ones that help facilitate that. And you could help facilitate that as well as get an electric football player onto your football team. So, I mean, I'm sure they're doing everything they need to do with the background, but if he's there at 19, that or any place in the first round, you just kind of scratch your head and say, okay, I mean, I guess they know more than I do, and you just brush it off to that. Couple of quickies. We have 3 minutes left before I let you go, and this has been great, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate the time. Rick Saratella from NFLDraftBible.com. 3 minutes left, two quickies. The first, give me a diamond in the rough, Rick. Give me somebody like a late-round pick that could turn into a big-time player, somebody who's maybe not on the radar that everybody's talking about over these first one, two, three rounds, someone in the fourth round and beyond who could maybe make an instant impact on a team.
You know, I'm gonna talk about a guy right here in our neck of the woods at Stony Brook, Miguel Maisonet. Here's a kid under the radar. Could he be a mid-round guy? Could he be a late-round guy? Could he go undrafted? But what I had a chance to see him up close and personal at his pro day workout. This kid brings a lot to the table. And you talk about, you know, Marcus Coker coming over from a big D1 school playing backup to this kid. I mean, that's how talented he is. So I think, you know, he's going to be a guy that comes in and starts at the next level, in my opinion. And one quick I do want to throw out there, because nobody's talking about him, he's probably a third or fourth round guy. I believe Landry Jones is the best quarterback in this draft, just in terms of experience and his ability to run 100 different plays from a no-huddle offense, his accuracy, and what he brings to the table. I think he's the most ready signal caller in this draft to make an immediate impact.
Great insight there from Rick Saratella. I got one more for him. I promised him I'd butter him up with his favorite team, and that would be the Denver Broncos. Peyton Manning is your quarterback, a tough loss on that brutal Flacco bomb that was underthrown to lose that divisional playoff game to the Ravens, and, of course, they go on to win the Super Bowl. But what do you think the Broncos do at 28? What's your crystal ball saying there?
Well, I mean, they seem pretty set on the offensive side, so I do think they go defense. I think defensive tackle is just loaded in this year's draft, and I think if they can get a guy to slide to them, whether it be a Sheldon Richardson, whether it be a Sly Williams from North Carolina, even a Jesse Williams from Alabama, I think one of those defensive tackles could kind of fit their scheme. If not, I think safety is the way to go, maybe an Eric Reed or a Matt Elam to kind of solidify the secondary. You got to prepare for Champ Bailey eventually departing that secondary. Why not bring one of these young safeties to kind of learn from the best and kind of be the new leader of the secondary? So I think defensive tackle or safety is probably the way they lean towards.
All right, Rick, listen, we have 40 seconds left. I just want to thank you once again for coming on. Rick Saratella, NFLDraftBible.com. We will have you back on next week, Rick, to break down who indeed the local teams pick. I want to get a scouting report on every one of the Giants and Jets draft picks from Mr. Rick Saratella. Can we mark that down in pencil and pick a day next week?
Put it in the books.
All right, brother. I appreciate it. Excellent job out of you today. We will get you on next week. Again, that is Rick Saratella. I'm Chris Sheeran. This is the Off the Wall podcast on Blog Talk Radio and YesNetwork.com. It'll be archived there all day, and we'll see you next time. 12:30 tomorrow right here on Blog Talk Radio.